Her daughter Audrey hanged herself after she was sexually assaulted. Sheila met Daisy Coleman and her mom Melinda for the first time at this interview about the documentary Audrey and Daisy. That does it for the show. Special thanks to Amy Littlefield and Laura Gottesdiener. I'm Amy Goodman from Park City Television in Utah.
This is WHFR Dearborn, and now it's time for our public affairs show, and we call it the new WHFR Journal. Welcome to another edition of the new WHFR Journal. My name is Jay Koronek. Thank you for being with us today. We are all about local news and alternative views, a lot of perspectives on what's going on in Dearborn and the surrounding area. And I'm joined in the studio, back in the saddle again, our WHFR News Director, John Conroy. Hi, John.
Yes, how you doing, Jay?
So you weren't having fun out there. You had a little health issue, and but you're coming out of it now, thank goodness, right?
Yes, okay. Coming back strong.
Yep. That's the spirit. And he said to me today, the usual metaphor, he believes he's on the right path now. And I said, the path to WHFR.
There yes. we go.
Right. Because we always make people feel good around here, except when we do the sad news every now and then on the show. Last week I spent, I don't know if you caught my show or not, but 47 minutes on the Flint water crisis out of the hour. And I was trying to point out a few of the heroes, the people that were responsible for getting national attention finally to the crisis, so that the state government would finally decide to do something. You know, it seems it has to get national attention in all the media. Was it just yesterday, the Michigan legislature, they voted unanimously. When has that ever happened, huh?
Not too often.
Talk about bipartisan.
Yeah.
To agree to the $28 million that Snyder was asking for, however they're going to spend it on the Flint water crisis. I don't think that's all the money they really need long term, but, you know, could anybody vote against that after the national spotlight was on them? And MSNBC, even this week, I think it was Wednesday night, Rachel Maddow show, the whole hour was there in Flint.
Yes.
And she actually had on the show the doctor, I can't remember her name now. She was she's an immigrant to this country, but Dr. Mona, it's not in front of me, but she was on, here it is. Okay, right, let me get it right, because I love her. She got her picture in here, too. Dr. Mona Hanna Atisha. The last Hanna Atisha is a hyphenated last name. And she was the first one that did a press conference, got people together, and then was harshly criticized by other doctors in Michigan. And it just came out today, perhaps you saw it on the news too, is that, when did Snyder know this? When did state government know about the problem with the water? Well, it turns out that sometime in the middle of last year, state offices in Flint got permission to have special water coolers for themselves to drink from, because yes. they wouldn't drink from the tap. So
it was okay for them, but
yeah, it's okay to bring in water for your state employees, but you, to heck with everybody in Flint. Supposedly state government is there for the people, right? For the good of the people, not just keeping state employees in fresh water. So and the result, besides Dr. Mona, as I'll call her, there's also several other people. The expert on water quality from, it's a university in Virginia, and I see a picture of him here. I've got actually a picture in this email from about the Rachel Maddow show, and he was on the show too, and he's now part of, there's a new interagency water quality committee, advisory board, whatever, set up in Flint, and they appointed him to it too. I don't think he's a Michigan resident. He's from West Virginia Tech, but he's one people that called out early on for getting something done here, something changed. And so with this kind of attention, is that what it takes? You know, some people, just an aside here, but it's my insight, is, you know, some people say about Bernie Sanders' campaign, well, I agree with everything he says and everything I want. Some people say that. Yes, they do. But he'll never, they say, he'll never get it through Congress. You know, they'll fight him. Republican majorities, if reelected, will fight him just like they fought Obama. Well, in fact, what does Bernie say? He says, ah, but if the public demands it, and I'm thinking Flint water crisis,
right.
If there's a national outcry for something to change to Washington, D.C., even, the U.S. Congress, they can't go against it. They've got to do what happened in Lansing. Of course, Lansing was so totally guilty, I think, both, I mean, legislators might say, but we didn't know anything about it. It was all the, you know, governor's agencies and his people. They didn't tell us anything, and maybe that was true. Although there is a committee in the House and the Senate that talk about, you know, water quality, water issues, I know. But anyway, I'm just thinking that, this is a great example of how if you get enough people out there, you get enough attention, and if it has to be national media, then so be it, and something's going to happen. Now, hopefully, there's going to be a long-term solution they're going to work out, and not just the short-term, send them some water bottles. As we know, there's a heck of a recycling problem in Flint right now. But hopefully, they're collecting all those bottles, and they're making them into tires or something else that's worthwhile.
Useful.
But yeah, not just throwing them away beside the road in Flint, you know, because that's all they need is a problem with more trash, you know,
aquifer
in that city.
Problem then, you know.
Oh, exactly. So now the other that's sort of good news, and change is going to come about, even though we had to have this national spotlight thrown on the Flint crisis and who's really responsible. But sadly, I think it was Wednesday night, everybody knew about it yesterday, I guess, in the area, in the major media, another person, unarmed, I believe, was shot and died by Dearborn Police. This woman, according to the story that I read, and I'm just summarizing, I'm not quoting any statement here, so if I get it wrong, my apologies, but she tried to run down two security guards at Fairlane Town Center. The Dearborn Police got involved, and in trying to arrest her, she resisted arrest. They had at least two police cruisers that had to sort of cut her off to bring her to a stop, but then they shot their weapons. Three bullets, I understand, went into the car, and she died. So she was resisting arrest, technically, for, you could say, attempted homicide. I mean, that's what, if she tried to run them down, that means she could have killed them. I'm not sure they were actually run over at all, but she tried, so it was kind of like attempted homicide or attempted, do they have attempted manslaughter?
Assault.
Attempted assault?
Yeah.
Okay. So whatever it was, I still feel, as many people in our society do, unless there's clearly evidence of a weapon that they have, that they're going to use on someone else or themselves or the police officers, you shouldn't use lethal force. You shouldn't use guns in that situation. And I don't know what the rules are, but I do know that Dearborn Police Chief Ron Haddad sent out an email. He is very upset. He's very concerned. He's very regretful that this happened. And as he stated, there's a full investigation by an outside independent agency is taking place. So as I suggested about the man who was the incident in December, the man who was shot by Dearborn Police, who was also unarmed but a different set of circumstances, let's not jump to contusions, as I say. Let's let the process happen. I do believe that the independent committee will investigate fairly, and then it's up to the city of Dearborn to do its own prosecution, or charges may be brought up by some other agency, Wayne County or whatever, if needed. So we've got to let all the evidence be fairly judged, and then we'll see who's responsible. Obviously, there's a huge national spotlight on all of these kinds of incidents, and what can we do about it? Not much, except just let the process happen. Okay. In this case, there was video footage taken by the police. That hasn't been released yet, but that will be part of the evidence that will be assessed. So we'll find out what happened. I just don't understand from a procedural point of view why firing your weapon, your gun, when there's no evidence that someone is either directly threatening you or anyone else with a weapon of their own is happening. You know, I just don't. I mean, what's wrong with a good taser? Tasers can, I think some of them can be good at 15 feet. So a taser can't shoot into a car unless they got the window down, I guess. But, you know, there's got to be some changes.
I just wanted to say that they could have seen the car as a deadly weapon. That's probably how they were looking at it, and they didn't want to take any chances.
That's why I needed two cruisers to stop her, because she was trying to, I don't know, maybe she even smashed into a police cruiser or something. So, yes, absolutely, a car is a deadly weapon by all means if it's directed at people. Mm-hmm.
And it wasn't, and it also was not exactly the light of day. It was in the evening. So
Now we're not making excuses for anybody. We're not bad mouthing the police. No. I think we're saying we want all the facts to be fairly judged and then figure out what's going on and try to figure out what to do in the future so that these kinds of unfortunate deaths won't happen. But it's true. If you threaten police officers or you don't stop when they say stop, you know, they will do everything they can to turn that around. And yes, they have guns. So, So we've got to be careful about that. Well, one of our two scheduled guests for today's show is Rick Goward, and he has not shown up yet. So he might be out practicing with the HFC Big Band somewhere, because they've got a big concert coming up, or maybe they're setting up even today. For the Big Band Bebop, and what is it, John? Tell people about the big event at the Ford Community and Performing Arts Center tomorrow night.
Sure. It's the HFC Big Band, the Dearborn High School Jazz Band, and the Utica Eisenhower High School Jazz Ensemble will present a Big Band Bop and Pop concert on Saturday, January 30th. This Saturday at 8 p.m. at the Ford Community and Performing Arts Center in Dearborn. And this is, we'll present this concert with sponsorship by the Rotarians, the Rotary Club of Dearborn.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. They probably are the ones that are paying for the rental, because City of Dearborn hasn't been too friendly about giving freebies in terms of their spaces to nonprofit groups. So I would think Dearborn Rotary was called in to help the big band and make it a true fundraising event for them by paying the rental fee for the facility. But that's okay. I understand they have to, city has to try to break even. It's expensive to open them. But just so people know, if we say the HFC Big Band, and there's a couple other bands playing with them, we'll talk about that in a minute, but everybody thinks, oh, they're going to be at the Adrae Auditorium on the Henry Ford College main campus. Not this time, folks.
Nope.
Okay, this is a big concert, and this is in, is it in the Guido Theater or Studio A?
It's in the Guido Theater.
Yes, okay.
At the Performing Arts Center.
Big, fancy, classy, and it's all to raise money for, I think, their scholarship fund in the music department.
It's college scholarships awarded to deserving students.
Yep.
It's a big commitment made annually by the Rotarians.
Mm-hmm.
And the tickets for the concert are just $20. And another interesting tidbit is that the three Dearborn-based restaurants are going to offer dinner discounts for these prior to the concert.
Mm-hmm. You know, I guess you could mention them if people are thinking of eating. Okay. Again, it's an extra incentive maybe to go to the concert, because I think maybe you have to have your tickets in advance to prove that you're going to get that discount at the restaurant. But probably go ahead, mention the three quick.
Sure. It's Edison's at the Dearborn Inn. It's La Pita Mediterranean Cuisine and at 22681 Newman.
Yep.
And Roman Village Cucina Italiana, Dix Avenue in Dearborn.
Okay. Yeah. And what else can we say about them? Well, as I said, it's not just the HFC Big Band, which does great versions, new interpretations, in some cases, new arrangements of classic 1930s, 40s, and 50s big band music. But they're also going to be, and so they could just do the same, the whole concert themselves, but they're also featuring two high school bands, which are well-regarded for their jazz and big band performances. The high schools are?
Yes, they are Utica Eisenhower High School and the Dearborn High School Jazz Band. Okay. And the quote from Rick Goward is, this is the first time we've adding these two outstanding high school jazz bands.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it's great to feature that kind of talent. And this is a beautiful venue. Again, the Guido Theater is the one that has all the major presentations. I think it seats about 1,200 people. And so I don't think they're sold out. So go over and support these great performers, these great talented students, both high school and those here at Henry Ford College, and all the proceeds go to help our scholarship fund and help needy people attend college and be further trained and further develop their skills. So it's a great event. If Rick was here, he would hear me compliment him. I've worked with him for many years over when I in the Fine Arts Building here on campus, the main campus of Henry Ford College. I was the department head, as it was called then, of performing arts, and that included speech and music and telecommunication, of course, and theater too. And so you know, music just a part of it. Rick Goward was the head of that area then, and in 1998 I sort of retired from that position after 10 years, and Rick not only decided to run for the head of the group, but in fact the whole building was formed into a new entity, much more prestigious, the Fine Arts and Fitness Division. So we got physical fitness tossed in there, and the art department joined us and in a one big division. Now, since then, the college is reorganized and we're all split up again. Telecom is in, and speech are in the communication division, which is mostly English people. That is the English department. And theater and music are in social science. First time ever I ever thought of music, but why not, mm-hmm. right?
Oh, yeah.
They influence society, and rightly so. The arts are a part of society, believe it or not, not an extra thing. And Rick was the division head of Fine Arts and Fitness for, I think, 8 or 10 years. He retired, I don't know what the date was, but in 1995 he received a great honor. It's the Mayor of Dearborn's Art Awards, and that's organized and supported by the Dearborn Council for the Arts. That's coming up again in a couple of weeks. But Rick was given the award of Art Educator of the Year in 1995, and I'm sure he's had many, many other awards and since then. One of the things that he does now, since he's retired, is continuing to direct the big band. They do a lot of performances out and about in the community and around the world. They completed, it might be their 10th or 12th, tour of Europe, performing all throughout Europe at different venues, including some of the great jazz festivals. Our reputation as a college, a music department too, has spread certainly to Europe. And I think they went to Hawaii once too. Boy,
well, that'd be good.
I'd do radio in Hawaii if anybody yeah. asked me. On the beach, too, outdoors. I don't care.
Yeah. Look good out there, Jim.
Uh-huh. So what we have queued up here is their new CD, which is available directly from Rick Goward at this point, although I bet there'll be a bunch of them on the table in the lobby of the Ford Community and Performing Arts Center tomorrow night. And it's called Euro Tour 15, Swing with a Little Twist. So, and this was recorded all digitally, and it was at the Arena Bindi on the boardwalk of Santa Margarita. Ooh, they have margaritas there too, maybe. No, not necessarily, but there's a St. Margarita. Boy, everybody that's into drinking, I wonder if they realize, here's one, the St. Margarita. Anyway, that's a town in Italy, folks, and it looks beautiful. There's a little picture on the back of the CD here. Great music, and even the sale of these CDs, all of it goes back to benefit the music students and music program at Henry Ford College, because they have costs, you know, and the college only pays a portion of it, just like for WHFR. College gives us a little, you know, foundation, we have to raise the extra money, and our annual pledge drive is coming up in April, by the way. More about that in the future, of course. So let's at least feature one tune from the Henry Ford Big Band Euro Tour 15 CD, and this is the first track, in fact, and it's entitled Sing, Sing, Sing. WHFR.FM, the station making waves. We'll be right back. We have a lot of stories here on the New W Richard Journal, and no insult to a great music in the new CD from, and there's more than one track. Yes, let's see here. Euro Tour 15, Swing with a Little Twist, 10 different tracks, all by the Henry Ford College Big Band. Okay, under the direction of Rick Goward, who apparently was not able to make it to our show today. But definitely, if you can get out and support great big band and jazz music, they'll be in concert tomorrow along with two great high school jazz big bands at the Ford Community and Performing Arts Center starting at 7 p.m.
Right.
And it'll be a great show, and you can get a copy of the CD there as a great souvenir. Maybe some of the band members or Rick Goward himself will sign it for you. What the heck? It's certainly possible. And
actually, at
8 p.m. Oh, 8. Okay, let's get the people there on time. But if you want a good seat, get there at 7.
Okay,
yeah, but okay, I don't have John's mic on, so okay, I'm just repeating what he said. Now you're on, John.
Okay.
Okay. But if you want to write this down, say, well, I can't make it there. I'd like the CD. I'd like to help the cause. It's R. Goward. That's R-G-O-W-A-R-D. So R. Goward at hfcc.edu. Just send him a little email and tell him you want the CD, and he'll get in touch with you, and you can talk about the financial transaction that way. And that's the best way to do it. Again, R-G-O-W-A-R-D at hfcc.com. Okay, we've got a phone call coming in. I'm going to take that. It might be somebody important. I think I know who it is. Hi, this is WHFR, Jay speaking. Oh, great. Okay, just hang on. So you have time to be with us today, say maybe till 2 o'clock at the worst? Okay, great. Okay, well, we'll let you go a couple of minutes before then. Okay, put you on the air, talk to you again in just maybe 15 seconds. Hang on. Okay, so I'll push some buttons now. This is the second guest that was set up to be on the show today. This is Eddie Alderman. So, hey, Eddie, can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay. All right. I've got to turn up my headphones a little, but we're doing fine here. Eddie Alderman, I'll give you a brief introduction, but we talked to you last year on our auto show, as they call it, and you are still the editor-in-chief of Car and Driver magazine, based in good old Ann Arbor, Michigan. And that is, let's give the status here, a big responsibility, because not only, what do you have, how many editors do you have there? You're editor-in-chief. I noticed in looking at the masthead on the magazine, there's something like 20 or 30 editors doing a variety of things. Everybody's called an editor, right?
That's right. And everybody is an editor.
Well, yeah.
And we're scattered about the globe.
You have to make great decisions about what you're going to do. And so everybody, in a way, is an editor, as well as literally editing what they write, of course, too. But I happened to look this up, and maybe give me an update, but your circulation of Car and Driver magazine, again, around the world, many different, in many different languages, 1.23 million.
Yep.
Is that about right?
That's right. We are the largest car magazine in the world.
Yep. I mistakenly, when we talked before, mentioned that I also subscribe to Car Magazine out of England. But they're, for whatever reason, their subscriptions are, or their circulation is going down. Maybe that's because they've got this big, expensive, glossy magazine, and they have high costs. So it's a high cost publication, certainly. And their annual circulation is about 600,000 or so internationally, but it's a quite unique publication anyway. If you've got
a little different business model, newsstand focused. They mm-hmm. sell 90% of their copies off the newsstand, whereas we sell 90% of our copies through subscriptions.
Yeah.
So it's sort of the inverse. And I don't think they're that big. I think it's surprising. I think they're under 100,000 in total circ. But it's surprising how a magazine like that punches above its weight. It really is fantastic, and we're jealous of their paper quality.
Well, yeah, sure. Obviously, if people want that sort of magazine that fits on your coffee table, you know, and is sort of a objet d'art of its own sort. It's something you want to keep around for a while too, just because it's pretty and good photography. But not to slight Car and Driver, I want to mention, and I, full disclosure here, I've been a subscriber, I think every year, since it began as Sports Car Illustrated in 1955.
Wow, really?
So, yeah, yeah. Now, I read pretty widely, and I subscribe to other automotive magazines, too, as I said, Car Magazine currently. But and I also subscribe to Road and Track. So, and I looked at the masthead there. You're editor there, too.
Editorial director there.
Yeah. So, how is obviously editor in chief? You're responsible for, I guess, everything at Car and Driver. But how is it now? I know both magazines are owned by Hearst Publications. So, but you're both in Ann Arbor, so at least you don't have to drive too far to do your job. Maybe you just have one office and you just call different people or something from it. But how did that happen, though? Have you been an editor at Road and Track for very long?
No, I was given the role of editorial director just about 2 years ago, and it's really an advisory role, very hands-off. The editorial team they have there is fantastic.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think there is a different focus I've been noticing in the last year or so with Road and Track. For example, they did, it was sometime last fall, a sort of a design issue. So they took that sort of theme, and they had a lot of stories written about the best designed cars in the history of automobiles and explanations about why some of those were so good. So I kind of like that because it's a little different than just testing new cars.
Right. Road and Track has really taken off down its own path, and I think it's fantastic. It's not a me-too car magazine anymore.
Right, right.
And, we always say that Car and Driver is the head and Road and Track is the heart.
The
Road and Track is really about that automotive passion and getting the reader as close as possible to the action on the track or on the street, whereas Car and Driver is a little bit more rational, a little bit more left brain.
Mm-hmm.
And we do a lot of automotive testing. And as you know from reading SCI back in the day, we sort of invented automotive testing, and we still do a ton of it today, and we're expanding, actually.
Well, we want to talk about the auto show itself, which is now past, so anything, we can't give any encouragement for people to go down there, because if they didn't, they have to wait till next year. We also want to talk about, if we have the time, Car and Driver's choices for not only the auto show, but probably should just go towards your list of 2016 best cars. And I'd also like to bring up, if we have time, just your thoughts, because I've noticed in the last couple of years a lot of different sources on the web, whether it's YouTube channels or whatever, of a bunch of, and all opinions on this show are not necessarily those of anyone here at Henry Ford College. And by the way, John Conroy, my colleague, is here listening to this too, and so he may jump in at any point. But
hello, Eddie.
Yeah.
Hi.
I had to get his mic up. Now he can say hi. Okay.
Hello, Eddie.
There we go.
Hi, John.
Anyway. There's a lot of crazy people out there. There's all different kinds of ways to review cars, and a lot of people have a lot of different opinions, and rightly so. But let's get, I'd just like to recommend to our listeners, if they're looking for new cars, they need some expertise. They need either Car and Driver, or a different angle would be Consumer Reports. They do testing extensively. My gosh, they even take the trouble to buy cars themselves. I mean, they buy them outright. And they have the different criteria than Car and Driver. And I'm just saying that, got to kind of go with people that have the experience and have extensive time and testing facilities before you make a firm decision, because there's so many cars out there. There's got to be more cars, certainly more models, if not more makes, than at any time in history. Is that sort of true? Or
that is absolutely true, and that's why it is so confusing out there for the average car buyer who might be completely out of the market for the past 11 years, and they come back in, and there are all these new choices, all of these new powertrains, from hybrids to small displacement engines, all-wheel drive. What should I get? You know, it's a very, very daunting decision.
Mm-hmm.
And Car and Driver's role is really, through objective testing and very credible editorial, to really help people make those decisions and to inform them at really the highest level of what is good and what is not. The problem for us is that everything is pretty good. So
going
from good to great is kind of where the magic is, and that's what our job is to find out.
Well, I should probably segue. I know we're supposed to talk about the auto show, but again, that is past. So besides your choices for 10 best cars of the year, which was that December issue or whatever, it's on
January
your website.
Issue.
Yes, and everybody, you should check out carandriver.com website for information. It's free. The website is free, folks, so, you know, but I mean, magazine is better to read and reread and so on, but of course. But I have to commend you the way the website has gone. In fact, do you still have a Car and Driver app anymore?
Yeah, we do. We have a buyer's guide app. But, you know, with mobile and responsive designs from website templates, you can pretty much read the whole website on your phone.
Yeah. Well, I have to say that I haven't used that Car and Driver app because there was so much information, but maybe it was a year or two ago when I stopped using it because the mobile devices, you've got your website set up to automatically know if somebody's accessing it by a tablet or a smartphone, and the size and the content even changes to make it easy to use for those. And that takes a lot of work and effort. I know we have a little newsletter for WHFR, and we had to do about 40 different tests of different platforms in order so that it would always sort of fill the screen in the appropriate way. So you actually have a category besides the 10 best. You have categories there for almost anything anybody is thinking of, but you have recommendations, usually two or three at least, of cars that you've tested, and even they're sort of grayed out, but cars that are coming out soon that you haven't finished looking at to review that people might want to wait for or look for in the future. And I think altogether, I mean, how many categories? I made a list here. Well,
that's right. I mean,
just too many categories, but it's easy for people to easily look down there. For example, I didn't realize, and it's certainly true of the popularity of crossovers, SUVs, you have a subcategory. You've got a small lux category. You've got a compact category, a compact lux category, compact perform, and so on and so on. But I think a lot of people, that will help them narrow it down, you know, by those kinds of categories at the outset. And that's, I found that really useful. Now, there, of course, there's always a few comments from the people in the virtual reality there. And, you just put all the cars in there. Well, no, you didn't. You didn't put all the cars
so
in.
So many cars, it just seems like it.
Right. You really narrowed it down to really good choices according to your, you know, large group of editors.
On the website, we have something called Editor's Choice, which is different than 10 Best.
Right, yes.
10 Best is really the tip of the spear, and these are the cars that the editors would buy if with their own money.
Sure.
And we have them sort of narrowed down to pretty strict categorization, where everything has to be under $80,000. It has to be a car. It can't be a crossover or something taller than 54.5 inches. Which seems kind of arbitrary, but it's not. Mm-hmm. But, you know, 10 Best is really a very select group of cars that aren't necessarily the best-selling cars, but these are the vehicles we feel that fulfill their mission the best, are the most fun to drive, and really offer a ton of value for the money. Because, let's be honest, for $80,000, you can make a car great. But it's much harder to make a $25,000 car great. It's much harder to make a Honda Accord for $27,000. As good as it is. And so, you know, half the cars on our 10 best list are under $30,000. Whereas on the editor's choice stuff on our website, we're in all categories and recommending the top four or five cars in those categories.
And I think that's fine. We're not going to go down that long list. Don't worry about it. But I'll just read them quickly. The 10 best 2016 from Car and Driver, BMW M235i, the Cadillac CTS Dash V, Camaro in general, I think, Ford Shelby GT 350, Honda Accord, Mazda Miata MX-5, Mazda 3, Porsche, again, old favorite from your past list, of course, both the Boxster and the Cayman, Cayman being the coupe and the Boxster the Roadster convertible, Tesla S70, and a VW Golf. So there's some returning favorites on that list among your group. But again, there's a lot of choice there. There's
four American cars on the list.
Yeah, there's no SUVs per se, but what the heck, you know?
We don't have SUVs in this cohort because it's 10 best cars.
We've
done a 5 best SUVs list, and we might bring that back. But we like cars. We like to drive cars that are low to the ground, low center of gravity, fast.
I don't know
who's the rare crossover that feels different than the other crossover.
I don't know who started it. I've seen it for a long time in Car Magazine. The way that get hold of a number of new cars and you keep them for like 6 months or a year or something.
We keep them for 40,000 miles.
Oh, 40,000 miles, okay.
And we try to get all that driving done in 1 year.
Right.
We have 10 of those cars in our office.
And there's updates in every issue about how that, you know, long-term experience is going. And I think that's really helpful to people, too. That's a very good thing for people to know about, because a lot of cars seem good the first drive or maybe even the first time around the track. But
we try to put 3 years' worth of miles on every car in a year and do a report on it and see, you know, where the pain points are and also what might break, what's vulnerable.
Mm-hmm.
The thing is, cars have gotten so good and so incredibly reliable that what's happening now is that we're really starting to write about a car's personality more than its reliability woes, which is a nice thing. You know, I think that's great for consumers.
Yeah,
cars don't rattle anymore. They don't fall apart. They don't overheat. They're pretty well sussed out.
Consumer Reports still, of course, somehow tabulates complaints, I think, from their readers and maybe from elsewhere about which cars people complain about the most. And there's other services that do that. I don't know how scientific that is. There is some organization on the internet, autoguide.com, that claims that they have some sort of standardized, normalized way to figure that out, and they have a list of a number of problems and or complaints, and apparently Fiat, out of about 120, comes up at the bottom of their list. But even that is like one complaint per 68,000 or something cars or miles or however they normalized it. So it seemed to me that still, that's pretty rare. I mean, that doesn't happen that often, even though it was the worst car in their particular kind of survey. So reliability is, I mean, I still feel better if I can get to my dealer or service point within a half an hour to an hour if I had to. But that, you know, that it's true. They're much more reliable than ever before.
Yeah, and that was really the Japanese car revolution that happened in the late 70s.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Their manufacturing methods really taught the rest of the industry a lot of lessons.
So that I think we're just playing from topic to topic here, but that's okay. So is that one of the reasons why you think 2015 was the biggest year for car sales?
No, I think there are economic factors at play.
Oh, okay.
Money is cheap. Cars have a lot of new safety tech that people want to experience.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of people came off the sidelines. I think people are feeling fairly secure financially, more so than they were certainly 5 years ago. And as we've crawled out of the recession and car makers have offered more choice, I think a lot of people have come off the sidelines, as I said. But they're also, and I don't want to go too far down the rabbit hole, some of the bad practices of customer acquisition, like people with bad credit scores and 80-month leases, and those things are starting to creep into the market just so that car makers can move the metal.
That's possible.
I don't know if we're looking at another bubble here, but we had, you know, a really great, a record-setting 2015, but I don't think it's due to anything more than primarily financial
reasons. Okay. Well, apparently the Detroit Auto Show, we will get back to it and say a couple things here. It was the highest attendance, I think, ever. Something I read 800,000, 200,000 the first weekend. That could be off, but it was huge.
People like coming to Detroit again. It's pretty great.
Yeah, and there wasn't too much snow, even though it was bitter cold. But
But you know, what's funny is that there are a lot of manufacturers who bowed out this year.
Yes, I was going to mention
Land Rover. Tesla wasn't here because apparently Musk, you know, is upset that he can't sell cars.
Sure.
In Michigan, so why should he display? Mm-hmm. But Bentley wasn't there. Ferrari, Lamborghini, Rolls Royce. But despite that,
and Mini and Jaguar. You mentioned Jaguar, Land Rover.
Jaguar, Land Rover.
Right.
But I mean, despite that, there was some great stuff there this year, and some fantastic stories. Mm-hmm. The car makers are getting back to cars again. Even though crossovers are huge hits, and a lot of the volume that was added in 2014 and 2015 were trucks, SUVs, and crossovers, what you saw car makers showing at Detroit were coupes.
Mm-hmm.
The Buick Avista, which was just glorious.
Yes, it was.
Big format, kind of, it almost looked like a Tesla Model S two-door. Just beautiful car. BMW's M2, which is like we call it Munich's miniature monster. Uh-huh. That's in our next issue.
Okay.
The Lexus LC500 was just a showstopper. I mean, that thing mm-hmm. looked like a concept car, but it's actually a production car. So you had all these low-to-the-ground, sexy, slinky coupes. And I think that said great things about where car makers' heads are.
Did you mention the Acura Precision concept?
That's a four-door. It's
sort of coupe-like.
Yeah. It's very, very cool. Yeah.
I just hope some of those concepts come into reality. Buick, you know, had a beautiful car last year, the Avenir, and that is probably not going to be made, but it still helps their brand, I think, to have these kinds of show cars. I was down there last Tuesday in the afternoon. It seemed to me, and it was very surprising, that in terms of the most frenzied people pushing and shoving to see a car, and maybe it was just a bus from somewhere, you know, with the same people in it, but Subaru Outback, is that crazy or what?
Well, no, it makes sense. I mean, Subaru is doing a great job of offering terrific value, great space utilization, all-wheel drive, great reliability. Yep. They really hit kind of a sweet spot there.
And last year, maybe it was just the issue or the topic, but Tesla had just people pushing and shoving two, three deep. Of course, they had a small display with only four or five cars, but tremendous interest in the part of the Detroit public. And I don't know if I mentioned this to you last year, but Elio had a display outside the floor. I know they're just sort of an enclosed three-wheel motorcycle, and you have to figure, I think we talked about this last year, you have to figure that for a price, they say, of $6,800, if it's ever available to be bought, they still haven't begun manufacturing them, that they've got to compromise something there. I mean, they claim they've got great safety and so on. I still think it's a very interesting vehicle. I'm 6'1", and I jumped inside, and tons of room and space for one person. I even tried the back seat and felt claustrophobic, and I had to scream and get out of there quick, but because there's no doors or windows or vents, and it's a little tight. Although, in fact, I have more room in the back of my Mini Cooper than I did in that. But it's a very interesting vehicle, alternative vehicle, and of course they can get around some of the federal regulations by just being that three-wheeled motorcycle.
Right.
But I'm just glad to see them there and giving people a chance to see those other developments. I noticed that, and of course the federal government has control over this, but they are considering rules that might take away this sort of exemption from three-wheel motor devices.
Yeah, they've been talking about that quite a bit, and there's a Polaris Slingshot.
Yes, sure.
Have you seen that?
Oh yeah, and that's two seats side by side. Yeah.
That's pretty much a motorcycle.
Yeah. But, although no roof, folks. You got to wear your motorcycle helmet in that. But
also the Morgan three-wheeler.
Right. Oh, that's so classic. I don't know if that was written up in Rodent Track. It was a big story in some magazine last fall about
that. Yeah.
Yeah, that was beautiful. That's such a classic car. Well, anyway, but moving back from the Elio. The other thing was that...
apparently there's going to be a bunch of DeLoreans built since the federal regulations are now allowing any car that originally was designed before, well, more than 25 years ago, that you can go and put different things inside of it, you know, a newer engine or whatever, and it's, but really almost no regulations about safety or pollution or I don't know what.
You got to draw the line somewhere, and you know, if you're going to have classic cars on the road, why not update them with more modern engines, maybe some more safety gear, airbags, stuff
yeah.
like that?
Yeah, there will be some regulation. I understand there's some, you have to send some reports to some committees, but they won't require them to be crash tested or some of those real expensive things. And I think people perhaps would understand what they're getting into by getting a car like that. Well, what else did I see down there? Well, a lot of stuff that I enjoyed. Of course, I like classic cars, too. There was a 1983 Alfa. I think it was a, they call it a Stradale.
Stradale.
Uh-huh. And although I looked it up, I didn't see it existing in 83. And,
that's much, much older.
My book is 67 to the 69. Yeah, the 33 model. Right.
The P33 Stradale.
Mm-hmm.
Very, very cool car. But the coolest car of the show, I thought, was the Le Mans-winning Ford GT40 Mark IV.
The
mm-hmm. American driver team of A.J. Foyt and Dan Gurney won the 24-hour race. And did you see that car? It was out on the it was on the exterior, kind of part of a Ford performance display.
That was the one that won in 68 or 67.
That's 67,
Yeah. No, I was there in 67.
Really?
Name dropper that I am.
Wow.
I was actually in France studying, you know, taking some classes, and we said, hey, Le Mans, let's do it. So we got into a car, and we got some tickets from the auto club in France, and it's like 4 days. We had to camp out. You park the car and get trapped in the lot. I mean, an average person, you know, experience of it. And And so there we are waiting for the beginning of the race, and all of a sudden we see Henry Ford II come out from the stands and introduce his cars, and I'm thinking, we're from Michigan, and we came all this way just to see Henry Ford II? What in the world? And then they, of course, win 1, 2, 3, 4. I mean, every single car just blew away the Ferraris, and it was very emotional. It really was. It was
great moment in American
I didn't,
one of the best.
Yeah, so I didn't go back around when it was down there, but it's a tremendously designed car. It's very similar to the Ford GT when that comes on the market for whatever it's going to go for, $400,000 or whatever. It has similar designs there, but yeah, and that's absolutely, it's one of the great car designs of all time. I personally liked for style the Alfa Romeo 4C, just something about that look. I'm not saying I'd buy one, but I'm just saying I love the look of that design. What else here? My little award. I have an award for the best mascot of any car company. There was only one that I saw, but Michelin Man.
Oh, yeah, right.
I mean, was he getting attention? He was sort of a Pillsbury Doughboy type of character.
Of
oh, everybody loved him. So that was a great point, high point almost in my time down there. And I saw an awful lot of motorcycles. Both upstairs and downstairs. That's because apparently a lot of car companies are buying out, like some auto company bought Ducati and
Audi. Yeah, a VW group bought Ducati, and
of course BMW has their own motorcycle line that they've had for years.
Obviously, yeah. Honda. Yeah, mm-hmm.
So a lot of people are getting into a variety of different kinds of cars. Town and Country becomes the Pacifica in a year or two.
I really loved that thing.
Yeah.
I thought it was fantastic. And, you know, over the years, the Chrysler minivan has been cut up and diced and sliced, and it's one of the guys there described it as kind of a tissue box. Very, very, it's not very rigid because they cut holes for the stow-and-go seats. The thing has big apertures from the doors and the back. So they did a whole new platform, and apparently the same person was telling me that it rides very similar to a Jeep Grand Cherokee, which is just a fantastic
Yeah, nice, smooth car. My daughter owns almost a 200,000-mile-old minivan, which, you know, she has a small business of furniture, and she carries things in there and goes back and forth, and she doesn't like driving, but she loves that car. And the thing about the Pacifica that really got her interested, maybe if in a year or so, apparently it's going to have a built-in vacuum cleaner.
That's right.
Circuit.
So well, the Honda Odyssey already has.
Oh, do
that.
They? Oh, shame on them. Okay.
Yeah, they do, but it's in the way back where.
Ah, I see.
Pacifica's in the middle.
Yeah,
of
I assume there were different outlets. You could plug in your hose at different places around the car or something. So that's a breakthrough in automotive history there. The one thing I actually tried out, being 6'1", I don't often fit very well in back seats of cars, and so I was trying out a lot of those. Smaller compact sedans, not really small, and I found surprisingly a lot of them have a very low entry point, you know, like you have to dive in.
Sure.
and it turns out that Sergio Marcioni was actually making a comment, the head of Fiat Chrysler, last week, all about the Sebring 200 not having a high enough entry point that they...
Well, you know, they killed that car.
Well, yeah, really? they just announced that they're not going to probably do that anymore, and if anybody wants to build it, they'll let them have the plans, I guess.
Americans are getting larger, as we know, and that, I think that's also driving the rise of crossovers.
There's got to be something wrong there. I've always had problems with even... Well, a couple of the cars I was able to get into, but then my head was trapped in the back seat in a sort of a cutout in the ceiling in order to give me an extra inch. But so I couldn't really move my head more than an inch or two to the left or right or front or back, or you know, I would have hit the ceiling.
Comfortable.
It's great. Just unbelievable if you're going to have a four-door car. Now, of course, if you're shorter height than 6'1", maybe that's not an issue. But I certainly understand Marcioni's comment, because I couldn't believe how many cars I had that problem with. Okay. Oh, and of course, my award for the biggest handout, the biggest brochure, Acura. Okay, maybe you didn't get one, but it's like an 8-page brochure, full color, of course, heavy stock, 16 inches high, 10 inches wide. That was a monster, and I love brochures, but apparently there's very few brochures. They just have all those tablets to go to the internet there, and you know. If I want to go on the internet, I can do that a lot of places other than the auto show. I think that's wasted space. Okay. I get to complain now in the last minute, just as if I wrote you a letter to the editor. Okay. Yeah. You guys are still, even though it's one of your in your eight cars you recommend for sports compact, my Mini Cooper is a fantastic car, and I'm just quoting a few things that on your site various of your writers have said. They call it, in one case, aesthetically challenged. I have gotten comments from everybody under the sun about either how cute or how pretty my car is. Now, maybe some people don't want to have their car called cute or pretty, but of course I had the convertible model, so I'm not, maybe I had the top down or something. But I mean, everybody, rich, poor, I've never had a car. I've had Corvettes, I've had a brand new, and everybody, okay. Somebody said it was a parody of itself. I'm quoting the Car and Driver. They said it has...
it's gotten quite big and quite ungainly, and it has those roomy eyes now.
Well, okay. They said it has...
You have the older, more original...
I had the second generation, yeah. There's less cutouts at the front end. But, you know, even the BMW M2 has got a lot of intakes in the front. And
those look purposeful.
Yeah, you know, maybe. Okay. But the tiny trunk, one of your people said it has a tiny trunk. The trunks on the Mini Coopers in cubic volume are bigger than the Mustangs. So don't tell me I've got a tiny trunk.
Well, it's a hatchback, so it should have a bigger trunk. But
yeah.
I defy you to get that Acura brochure in the back of your convertible.
I get four full bags of groceries standing up in the back of my my Mini trunk, and there's an option. Most people don't know this, but they show you this when you get the car, is you can crank up the height under the hood level. You can get another 6 inches out of the, well, it's a crazy thing, but it's possible. So, again, so much fun. Thank you for putting in that category, at least, because it's unique handling and all of that, and that's my built-in commercial there. Oh, and somewhere else, somebody called it a rattle trap. I haven't heard any rattles.
We have a long-term one.
Oh.
It's falling apart.
Well, that's too bad. You've got a lemon, I guess. That does happen, huh?
Yeah, it does, even to us.
Well, I know you got a meeting, and I'll let you go. It's been a lot of fun. You know so much. Again, you're executive in chief of Car and Driver magazine, biggest circulation automotive magazine in the world, and also managing editor at Road and Track. And you guys have a great website, Car and Driver magazine. So you're very busy. So thank you for the time today, and let's keep informing people about what's good out there and allow them to have more fun and a better life, right?
Fantastic. Yeah. Thank you, guys. Thanks for the time, and thanks for the copious plugs.
Well, it's, just giving people ideas. There's a lot of choices out there, both for cars and magazines. So we're just trying to open some minds a little bit, open eyes, I guess. Thanks so much again. Take care.
Thanks, Jay and John.
Take care, Eddie. Yep.
Bye-bye. Okay, so we just got a few minutes, and Kitty Love and Highway 61 is coming up today, and we're going to have a really exciting time here. A little change in our programming schedule on Fridays. It's going to be blues from 2 to 6 p.m., but Kitty Love is going to be here now from 2 until 4 p.m. with a lot, and she's got all kinds of things planned for special features in the future, and a lot of great new music she's going to be featuring. And at 4 o'clock to 6 o'clock, Mike Holloway, okay, the man himself from Go With The Flow, Mike Holloway Show, which had been on Tuesday afternoons in Drive Time, and then was more recently, it's been on Wednesday nights. He had his last show on Wednesday night this Wednesday. He's going to be here from 4 to 6 from now on. And what a fantastic blues music afternoon it's going to be for you. Yours truly will not be able to cut in with Zydeco music unless somebody trips and falls and drops their CDs all over, and I'm not saying that might happen, but let's get back to the blues exclusively. And we've got our two great long-term volunteer DJs here to be with you starting in just a few moments. Thank you very much, John, for coming by today. We'll let you talk more next week.
Okay.
I promise. Okay, I'll even put your mic up.
Put
as
my
you
mic
say
up
that.
When
there,
I can.
Okay.
Yeah.
So
can I put a plug in for
absolutely.
Remember Everyone Deployed? RED means to wear red on Fridays to honor the veterans.
Okay, very good. All right, we'll keep in touch with that. Oh, and the water drive is continuing in at Henry Ford College to take bottled water up to Flint. They extended it another 2 weeks from today, so it's going to be all the way through Friday, February 12th. You can drop these things off here in the Student Center building on campus. It's room 109, Student Center building, Monday through Friday, normal business hours, room 109, and I'm sure if you tell the guards the visitor parking lot right at the front of the campus that you want to park there, it's the closest lot to the students to the Student Center building, because you're dropping off the water, that they'll let you do this. So two more weeks until February 12th that we're collecting water here to help the people up in Flint, just so you know. So it's WHFR Dearborn, and now let's Highway 61 start up its engines. Mexico.